This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Yesterday, one of baseball's all-time greats confessed that he used steroids. Alex Rodriguez spoke to ESPN after Sports Illustrated reported that he was among more than 100 players who tested positive in 2003. The admission was front-page news across the country. President Obama was asked about it last night at his news conference, and the story about steroids will not go away anytime soon. Next month, home run king Barry Bonds goes on trial for allegedly lying to a federal grand jury about steroids. The FBI continues to investigate the great pitcher Roger Clemens and whether he lied under oath to Congress. And just within the past hour, news that former American League Most Valuable Player Miguel Tejada has been charged for lying about players and steroids to Congress. It just seems a matter of time also before the names of 100 more cheaters are published from the tests of 2003. Oh, and pitchers and catchers report to spring training on Sunday. The subject also raises a question. Why do we care so much? Later in the program, your letters and a couple of clarifications. But first, why do we care so much about steroids and baseball? Tell us your story. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. And we begin in Portland, Oregon with NPR sports correspondent Tom Goldman. Tom, always nice to have you on the program today.
Hi, Neil.
And I guess we have to begin with news. Evidently, at least reportedly, Miguel Tejada, former All-Star shortstop, still an active player in the league, at least he'd like to be, has agreed to plead guilty.
Yeah, the news keeps coming. I don't know if you can call this the A-Rod effect or not, but, you know, as you said, after A-Rod went on national TV and yesterday and admitted that he had used, in his words, a banned substance, we have this news about Miguel Tejada just within the last hour. And, you know, Tejada, according to the Associated Press, is going to appear in court tomorrow and plead guilty. So if that is the new way to go, forget the denials, let's all plead guilty. That's probably going to get baseball out of this morass a little bit quicker than if everyone kept denying.
And we'll have more about confidentiality a little bit later in the program when we speak with one of Alex Rodriguez's former teammates. But nevertheless, these tests in 2003 were supposed to be not just confidential, but anonymous. This was part of a survey that the Baseball Players Union agreed to as part of a test to see whether there was going to be a need for a punishment program for steroids.
It was, and this is part of the controversy that's happening now. You know, how did Alex Rodriguez's name get out? What will happen to the other 103 names on that list of players who tested positive? At this point, it's all speculation, you know, as to who may have released this and what their motivation may have been. Was it an axe to grind with Alex Rodriguez, who, you know, it's been reported fairly widely that although an admired player, he's not a widely loved player. And so, yes, they were supposed to be confidential. There was the belief that after this survey testing was done in 2003 to determine if there were enough reason to institute a formal drug testing policy, that those test results were supposed to be destroyed by the union. They were not. Rodriguez was asked yesterday by Peter Gammons on ESPN if he was bitter about that. Rodriguez said no, he wasn't. But some people wonder why that is. The union released a statement saying yesterday that there wasn't enough time to destroy them before they were subpoenaed. So, that is their story at this point. But yes, there is some controversy swirling about this, about the union's involvement about this. Union official Gene Orza was said to allege to have tipped off some players, including Alex Rodriguez in 2004, about upcoming drug tests, which would be a no-no. So a lot of unanswered questions still on this.
Marvin Miller, the man widely regarded as who established the Baseball Players Union, the former president, issued a statement saying he did not understand that the union had been derelict in its failure to destroy these tests before they could be subpoenaed by the federal government. Once they are subpoenaed, of course, they have to be let go. But they are still wrangling in court over whether they can be released as part of the federal government's BALCO investigation.
Even in the union's explanation, their release statement yesterday, it was a little squishy because they said the date they cited as having all the test results was November 13th, and then they received word of a subpoena on November 19th. Some are questioning, well, there's 6 days in there. Why couldn't you have destroyed these tests in that six-day window? That hasn't been answered yet.
And just, you don't mean to parse language, but in the statement about Gene Orza and tipping players about scheduled steroid tests, the statement says Gene Orza never improperly informed anybody of upcoming tests. The placement of the word might be insignificant. It might be significant. But again, not just these kinds of readings, but as you look at the Rodriguez interview that was broadcast last night on ESPN, there's a lot that's left out. He said he didn't know what kind of drugs he was taking. He was not asked whether he was taking pills or injections.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, it is incomplete. I mean, let's give A-Rod praise, I suppose, for being honest. And perhaps this will set a trend when the biggest, the most preeminent player in baseball does this. But yes, these are critical things that are important to know. What exactly did he take? When did he take it? Where did he get these drugs from? When Peter Gammons first asked him, he did say, "I took a banned substance." That's singular, but we're talking over a 3-year period. Later in the interview, he seemed to mention things in plural. So we're just left to wonder. The Sports Illustrated article, which prompted this whole admission by A-Rod, said that there were two steroids that he tested positive for, testosterone and something called primobolan. But when asked specifically about that, A-Rod said, "I didn't know what I was doing," and basically said it was a gray area, it was loosey-goosey. It was the era of kind of anything goes, and we were experimenting. But I think people want more detail.
I heard an interview with catcher Brad Ausmus, who made an interesting analogy. What he said was, if you were driving across country and somebody told you would get a $50,000 reward for every hour you were early, and you were told there's a 65-mile-an-hour speed limit, but there are no cops out there and no radar guns, how fast would you drive? The analogy, of course, is that before 2003, there were no tests for steroids. It might have been illegal, but baseball essentially, wink, wink, nudge, go ahead, see what you can do.
Yeah, that's right. But, you know, with that said, the whole idea of detail is important as well, because, you know, it's an issue of credibility here on all these players' parts. It's amazing how selectively they forget things, because these are guys who have grown up and evolved as elite athletes, you know, treating their bodies like temples. And they, you know, especially you hear this associated with a guy like Barry Bonds or a guy like Alex Rodriguez. They know what they're putting in their body. Now for them to say, "Oh, I'm not so sure, didn't know what was going on," that seems highly unbelievable.
And by the way, we should note that we did invite the union president, Donald Fehr, Gene Orza, his aide, also baseball commissioner Bud Selig, to join us on the program, and they declined to do so. We will, however, hope to hear from you. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Why do we care so much about steroids in baseball? Mike's on the line. Mike calling us from Milwaukee.
Oh, hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead, please.
If you compare Major League Baseball to NFL football, most sport pundits believe that steroids have a much wider and longer involvement in NFL football than in Major League Baseball. I mean, you know, you have people like Fred Dreyer saying during the 1960s, you know, he saw players taking steroids. So why is it that steroids have been such a tragic and devastating issue in baseball, but barely draws any discussion, much less consternation, in NFL football?
Well,
I think it's because baseball fans care about the influence on their sport while the NFL fans don't. And I think this is, you know, at heart because baseball has these sacred records to its fans, like Hank Aaron's, you know, home run record and Ted Williams' 400 batting, you know, percentage for a season. And, you know, even people who don't follow baseball can actually tell you that, you know, Hank Aaron, and, you know, at least at one time, was the all-time home run leader. Even people who follow football, NFL football, a lot of people can't tell you which player has scored the most touchdowns in a single season, who is the all-time passer at quarterback.
Yeah, I think you've got a point, Mike, but Tom Goldman, it should be fair to point out, the pro football started testing for steroids 20 years ago, baseball just 6 years ago.
That's true, yes. And I'm not sure exactly of the dates. We know baseball started in 2004 in earnest. I think another point to this, and this gets into, you know, what the sports are promoting and putting out there. I think, you know, the things people want to see in football, which are high-velocity collisions and players getting up and walking away from them, maybe that's the reason that there is this sense that more drugs, that certain drugs are allowed to make you stronger and faster and so on. Because if you didn't have those, how many of these guys would be getting up from these things? So, you know, it's, yes, there's a lot of comparing and contrasting. I think in general, sports leagues are, being held to the fire now, and there's more outrage than there certainly was a decade ago, and there's more scrutiny, certainly by Congress, and as we heard, President Obama is weighing in his press conference yesterday. So, things are being shored up. There's still a long way to go in all leagues.
Mike, thanks very much for the call. Let's see if we can go quickly to Dick. Dick with us from Chicago.
Oh, hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I guess I just have a really brief comment, and I think the reason why myself and other people who care, apparently maybe a few more than I had thought, baseball is probably the last major professional sport that you can excel at without being a complete meathead. I mean, football, it's been that way for probably 20 or 30 years, but, I mean, and even now hockey, pretty much you have to be fairly indestructible to make the end of the season in hockey. So maybe it's a little bit more excusable to be cheating a little bit here and there, but in baseball, you can actually succeed. I mean, maybe you won't be a home run king, but if you can bat, you know, close to 300 and play your position well defensively, you know, you can make it as a professional athlete in baseball, and that's why there has to be, if not as much, probably more strict response to people who are cheating in baseball. That's my two cents. And
I'm sure Dick meant meathead in just a nice way. But
maybe not. But either way, I mean, you know, if you know baseball, you don't have to work out 8 hours a day and gain 50 pounds over the weight that you played at successfully in college to do well in the sport.
Dick, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. We'll talk with one of Alex Rodriguez's former teammates in just a moment, now writer Doug Glanville. Tom Goldman will stay with us, too. This is NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Quote, the only thing less surprising at this point than a baseball player being on steroids is a columnist clutching his pearls about the sanctity of the game, wrote Tim Marchman in Slate.com. The topic, of course, Alex Rodriguez's confession yesterday. Tim Marchman will join us a little bit later in the program. Right now, Tom Goldman is with us. He's NPR sports correspondent. Why do we care so much about steroids in baseball? Phone us, 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Just click on Talk of the Nation. Joining us now by phone from his home in Chicago is former Major League Baseball player Doug Glanville. He played with Alex Rodriguez for the Texas Rangers in 2003 and wrote a column for the New York Times.com called Understanding A-Rod. And, if he's a meathead, he's an Ivy League meathead. Doug Glanville, nice to have you on the program today.
Oh, always a pleasure. Great to be on.
And you played with Alex Rodriguez. Your locker was next to his for, I guess, about half a season or so. Did you at that time see any signs that he was taking steroids? Was this something you would have noticed in the locker room?
Well, I mean, I don't think that it is something you notice, certainly in any definitive way to be considered sort of evidence, I guess. It's one of the things where you play long enough, you start to get familiar with sort of your teammates. And after, say, playing with someone or against someone for 10 years, you kind of say, well, wait a minute, how did this guy go from, 150 pounds soaking wet to 220 in the off season. But nowadays the technology and the science is improving where, the physical changes aren't even as noticeable. I think it's, easier to mask these things. So as far as I was concerned, Alex was just a phenomenal player, which he still is in a large sense. And he, just was better than so many players and, just excelled at the game. And that's all I noticed when I was there.
Alex Rodriguez, some would argue the best player of all time, or at least in the top 10. You were a very good player. Some write that the people who were really ripped off by the guys who used steroids weren't the very good players or the great players, but the marginal guys who played their whole careers in the minor leagues and never took steroids but were robbed of the chance to play in Major League Baseball by some of those who did.
No, there's no question about it. I think that what gets lost in the shuffle is we focus so much on these superstars, and they're players that are already great players that, you know, go off the charts. But now the real issue is you have a lot of guys that are sort of on the bubble and are looking for that edge, that advantage. They want to figure out how to hit 25 home runs instead of 10. And those are the guys that really kind of, you know, make a difference and they lay under the radar. So a player like myself, if I'm competing for a center field job and you know, one guy's hitting 30 home runs and I was a base stealer, you know, I usually lose that battle. So I think that there's, you know, there's a lot of players that get lost in this shuffle that really got directly hurt.
And one of the things you wrote about in your column today was I detected a sense of outrage that these tests that were supposed to be anonymous and confidential wind up being leaked.
No, there's no question that that's something that's getting glossed over, that's, you know, a little bit disappointing to me because, you know, yes, I played clean my whole career, and I certainly don't advocate, you know, the steroid-induced world that we lived in the sense of the steroid era. But at the same time, I do, you know, as a player that can say this, you know, certainly I still exercise, you know, respect for the process, and I realize that, you know, we as players agreed to do certain things that were supposed to be confidential and anonymous. And if that doesn't happen, then what's the difference in criticizing, you know, a player like A-Rod, who basically said the end justifies the means, versus a person who gets data and information dishonorably, you know, in that sense and for reasons that, you know, basically hurt people. And I think that, you know, the end justifies the means in that case. We're getting information we shouldn't have, and we're using it against people, and I think that's not fair.
But it's now regarded as almost inevitable that these other 103 names are going to come out.
Well, I think it's going to be very hard to squash that because I think, you know, Alex is probably going to face, you know, something, maybe congressional, they're going to start talking to him. And, you know, he may be put in a very difficult position. So I don't know what's going to happen, and I think that's a shame because, you know, despite the fact that I want the game to be super clean, I don't feel like this is the way to go about it because the two agencies that are able to make a difference are the owners and the players. They have, you know, at their disposal, you know, an ability to right this ship. And now we're creating distrust, mistrust amongst the two agents that can cooperate and make this happen because now players don't want to take any tests. Am I going to end up on the front page of the, you know, of the internet the next day? So I think we have a lot of issues, and when you're violating privacy, confidentiality and things like that, you know, you're really creating a major issue.
Let's get
Neil, can I ask Doug a question here?
Go ahead.
Doug, this is Tom Goldman. I wanted to ask you, with what you just said, Doug, about, you know, it's being put out there that if you do release the names of the other players, that will help this process in identifying who was doing things and will help, you know, exonerate the others that you're talking about, the other guys who weren't doing it. You know, when you keep it in this celebrity vein, just, you know, one or two players, there's all this question. If you know who the other 103 are, it's a way to kind of distinguish between who exactly was and who wasn't.
Yeah, well, I think that would definitely yield that result. But my concern is this, like, you know, the point of the process that we created, the survey testing year, was that, okay, first of all, establish that there is a problem. And we're anonymously taking this test because really, in effect, all you need is a head count. We just need to know 5% or more. That was what was agreed upon, and that's why players, you know, voted to make this happen. And now, so you can't change the rules midstream and say, oh, wait a minute, oh, by the way, now that, even though these 104 guys, like, you know, hey, they did something that they shouldn't have been doing, but I think it's like, okay, they did their part, and they were, you know, found out in the sense of, like, they were a part of the statistics. And now we have a testing program, and Alex, you know, said, according to his conversation yesterday, that, okay, I was clean after that point. Well, that's the deterrent effect that we're looking for. Players who were using before, now that this program came into effect, now they're not using. So, you know what, that's a step in the right direction. I don't feel like, you know, hanging people from the stockade, so to speak, is a long-term solution. It's a short-term solution, and maybe you embarrass 100 people and all these things, but in effect, like, you still have to move forward and make that paradigm shift to say, you know what, maybe it's something bigger than just sort of these players, like, because there's always going to be something. There's always a cat and mouse game. There's going to be some other fancy thing in another year. So how do you get ahead of that curve? It's not by chasing sort of the crime. It's by figuring out a system and instituting something that's sustainable.
Let's get Jordan on the line. Jordan's calling us from Syracuse, New York.
Yes. I'm really disappointed in just how we're all kind of handling this. I mean, the simple fact is this. These guys were hitting all these home runs, and we as fans, the MLB, we all cheered it. We all loved it. We ate it up. And now, you know, okay, now we're looking back. It's like we're almost guilty that we let them do that. These guys were doing stuff that wasn't even against the rules, and now we're punishing them for it when it's really our fault for letting them do it. We created the atmosphere, and now we feel guilty for it, and it's our fault. We have nobody to blame but us. These guys really shouldn't, I don't believe, should be getting in trouble. They did what we allowed them to do.
What do you think about the fans' involvement in this, Doug Glanville?
No, I understand that point wholeheartedly. I think that there's a collective issue. One thing that I talk a lot about is there is a cultural reality that we face right now that, you know, we do have an enhanced society. It's not just baseball. It's the fact that, you know, people do not want to deal with failure. They don't want to deal with diminishing skills. They don't want to deal with the fact that, you know, they might lose a step or they might age. I mean, these are things that we're always trying to cut corners and find ways to outdo. And you miss the process and that goes along with learning from these experiences by, as Alex said yesterday, you know, what I have is enough. And that's an important lesson for everybody, but it's an important lesson for kids to know that what you have is enough. Why do you need to, you know, to avoid failure? Because, you could actually learn something from that. But culturally, we embrace this and we celebrate. You know, Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, you know, did their thing, hit their 60 home runs. Everybody was, you know, see, I was out there, you know, watching batting practice, Mark McGwire, and everybody was excited. The game was revitalized, and, you know, we didn't know what was really fully going on, but, you know, we celebrated these things. So a player like myself, who's not a steroid guy, who's stealing bases and 175 soaking, you know, pounds soaking wet, you know, I'm not quite as celebrated in that sense because I'm not a power hitter. And so, you know, you miss out on the guys that actually go there day to day, whether they're hurt, whether they're sick, whether they're whatever, they're still performing. And that has to be good enough by our society standard to consider that successful, even if they're not, you know, breaking, you know, records. But we focus so much on that end result that we lose sight of the fact that the process is really what's most important.
Absolutely.
Jordan, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you.
And Doug Glanville, I know you've got to run, but I also wanted to ask you one final question. There's a story you tell about Alex Rodriguez when you were his roommate about what kind of a competitor he was, about a spring training game against a college team, something that hardly anybody would think that mattered to anybody, especially professionals. Mattered a lot to the college players, though.
Yeah, no question. I mean, Alex, you know, we were playing the University of Texas to start off spring training, and that's not a game most players want to play in because they feel like they have everything to lose and nothing to gain. But, you know, Alex was leading off because Buck Showalter just wanted him to get one at bat and get out of there. And, you know, this crafty lefty struck him out, you know, a college guy. And Alex walked off, and I was on deck, so he's like, you know, I can't go out like that. So he stayed in, you know, instead of going home, he stayed. And then he waited for the lineup to turn over, and sure enough, he got his second at bat. And the pitcher was a little bit wild, and he stepped out and said, hey, tell the pitcher to bring it down to see how far I can hit it. And, you know, it was more funny than it was, you know, cocky, and he ended up hitting a ball about 508 feet, I think they measured it. And he stepped out and said, welcome to the big leagues, you know, and he had fun. But he was a tremendous competitor, and he is a tremendous competitor. And I think that environment sometimes, you know, people do make these choices to say, do whatever it takes because – I got to be the best, and I got to make sure this other guy isn't getting an edge on me. So, you know, I think that that's something that players have to deal with and grapple. How far is too far to go when you're trying to compete? And I think we really have to try to get back to center, not just baseball players, not just, you know, from a cultural across-the-board standpoint, that, you know, we get back to a place that we can all play on a more of a level playing field.
And Doug Glanville, thanks very much for your time today. We know you're busy.
Absolutely. Appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
Doug Glanville, a former teammate of Alex Rodriguez, with us by phone from his home in Chicago. If you go to our website at npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation, you'll find a link to the piece he wrote for the NewYorkTimes.com earlier today. Still with us is Tom Goldman. And here's an email that we have from John in Pennsylvania. It's time to dump the American and National Leagues and replace them with the Enhanced and Natural Leagues, one for the big home runs and indestructible pitchers, one for true athletes. This is another from Cletus in Monterey, California. In these difficult economic times, perhaps now would be a good time for Major League Baseball to merge with the World Wrestling Federation. They have about the same amount of credibility and steroid-free stars. And Kate in Bloomington, Indiana writes, do steroids really matter? As I've heard my husband go on and on about it, yes, steroids are not good, but they do not result in quickness with a bat or in several other qualities needed to be a good baseball player. Please take this question and discuss it so I don't have to hear him go on and on and on until this news cycle on A-Rod is over. And, well, I've heard that from a lot of people, Tom Goldman. Steroids can help you make you stronger, can help you recover quicker from workouts. They're not going to help your hand-eye coordination.
No, they're not. And you know, these players who have taken them, admitted to taking them, you know, have skill and have probably this innate hand-eye coordination or something they've developed over the years. The problem is that when you do these drugs, it leaves in the question in people's minds, where's the talent, where's the innate ability, and where are the drugs, and what is doing what? And that is the problem that will probably, in some fans' minds, haunt A-Rod for the rest of his career. He says he's got 9 years left on his New York Yankees contract. That's enough time to prove that he is who he is, take out those 3 years in Texas. But we really will never know. There's really no way to know. There's so much unknown about how this actually does affect and when does it affect and, you know, does it exactly make a warning track hit into a home run? What are the mechanics? What are the physics of all that? We don't know. And this is the sad thing. He was very, you know, several times in his interview, he was very specific about compartmentalizing. This was 3 years, you know, 2001 to 2003. And before that and after that, I'm cool. I'm fine. Well, there are some studies to say that there are lingering effects of performance-enhancing drugs. So how do we know in 2009 he's still not going to get benefit, even if he hasn't taken those drugs, from something he did in 2002?
We're talking about why we care so much about steroids in baseball. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Joining us now from member station WBEZ in Chicago is Tim Marchman, contributor to Slate magazine, where he wrote the piece Alex Rodriguez, Fallen Hero. And thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And one of the things you wrote about in your piece was that it is not just, the players that are concerned about this, but there was an awful lot of reporters around in 1998 and 99 and on into 2003 who, didn't seem to care so much about the sanctity of the game back then.
We have hyperbole inflation around this issue. 10 years ago, you had McGuire and Sosa. More or less anybody who was watching and paying attention knew what they were doing, that there was some sketchiness involved in the home runs they were hitting. And they were celebrated by a lot of the pundits. Mike Lupica, who writes for the New York Daily News, is constantly outraged over players doing drugs. He wrote a book called Summer of 98, where he credited these guys with saving the game. And that's the recurring pattern we've seen, where these players are elevated to the status of national heroes and then immediately torn down as soon as we learn truth that was basically self-evident all along. And so I think we get to the point now where we've flailed around so much, been so angry over these players supposedly cheating, that when someone like A-Rod comes along, we have to talk about how he's destroying the game and, you know, ruining the game for America's children. And by the time the next player comes along, I really don't know what hyperbole we'll be able to apply to it. I think the thing everyone should be doing instead is bringing the temperature down a lot on this, looking at why players take them, what legitimate reasons there are to be worried about it, what reasons there aren't to be worried about it, and tone down some of this this phony outrage we're hearing.
Well, one of the things that Alex Rodriguez said yesterday in his interview with ESPN was he had just signed the richest contract in sports, $252 million over the next 10 years, felt tremendous pressure when he reported to the Texas Rangers. He said, yes, I was young, I was naive, I was stupid, I did a dumb thing, I'm very sorry for it. Nevertheless, that kind of pressure, he says, is what convinced him to try it.
Well, there's incredible pressure, and I think anyone who spends some time around athletes knows that one of the things that really drives an elite athlete is an incredible sense of insecurity, a sense that you're never good enough and that nothing you can do can ever meet the standards that you hold yourself to. And that's why throughout the entire history of baseball, people have been doing these drugs. Babe Ruth used to ground up sheep testicles and eat them. And that was probably a crude way of getting testosterone, which is one of the drugs that Rodriguez allegedly tested positive for. Tom House, a pitching coach with the Rangers, has said that in the 60s there were players experimenting with steroids. We know that the Chargers in the 1960s actually dispensed steroids to their players. We know that in the late 80s, Jose Canseco was more or less openly taking these drugs, and we know that today there are players taking them who are doubtless getting away with it, even though there's a very good testing system in place. So if this is something that threads throughout the whole history of the game, we just have to, I think, basically acknowledge it as a fact, the same way we acknowledge, you know, the dimensions of the field and the fact that people like to watch it.
Canseco, Giambi, Caminiti, Palmeiro, Maguire, Bonds, now Alex Rodriguez. We're talking about steroids in baseball. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. In a few minutes, we'll read from your emails and web comments, but let's continue our conversations about steroids in the game of baseball. Why do we care so much? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Our guests are Tom Goldman, who's NPR sports correspondent, and Tim Marchman, a contributor to Slate magazine, who wrote the piece Alex Rodriguez, Fallen Hero. And I wanted to read a couple of emails that have different takes on this issue. This from Dennis in Puerto Rico. Why ban steroids in sports? The alternative is that the athletic arena will devolve into a commercial battleground for the drug producers as each one tries to outperform the next. This from Matt in San Francisco. In response to all the people who say, who cares? Let players put whatever they want to in their bodies. It's a personal choice. I rarely hear anyone state the most fundamental reason that steroids should remain illegal. If they are allowed, it will mean that anybody who wants to compete at the elite level of athletics will have to risk their long-term personal health to do so. This is not a choice we should force on our young people. It's not about personal freedom. It's about creating a level playing field free from unreasonable risk. And Tim Marchman also wanted to add those marginal ball players in minor league baseball that we were talking about with Doug Glanville earlier, those guys who might be robbed of their chance to play in the game by people who, take illegal drugs.
That's absolutely true, and I think that's the key issue here, is that you never want to force someone who's trying to reach the majors to feel that they have to do something that could be against their morals or injurious to their health. Especially because what a lot of people don't realize is that just making the majors can mean the difference between having health insurance for the rest of your life and not, or you know, staying in the majors just as a fringe contributor can mean the difference between having a good pension for your family and not. These are important goals to shoot for. It makes sense that people would feel pressured to take drugs, and that's why I think it's very good that baseball has a good testing program now that was negotiated between players and the union. But that's basically a labor issue. It's an internal issue that athletes have to decide for themselves if they want to be competing on a level playing field or not. They've decided that they do, that they're willing to invest in a good testing program. That should be supported. Everyone should support that. But that doesn't, I think, mean that the outside world has to put on a big false show of indignation every time someone unsurprisingly turns out to be trying to game that system. The reason players do drugs is that they think they make them better at baseball. They may not. We don't really know that, but we do know that they think they do. And we have to look at the fact that in every field, people do that. If you look at bankers, they do that. I think everybody who lives in a big city, you know, has heard some ridiculous story about bankers working 100-hour weeks and doing God knows what to stay awake during them. Internists, lawyers, anyone with a demanding, high-pressure job in today's society is going to be presented with the opportunity and the temptation to help to take some drugs to help them through it. I know as a journalist, I can tell you for a fact there are reporters on brutal deadlines who take things they're not supposed to be taking to help them with that. That's the reality that we have to look at this with them. That's the context. And I also think we miss the broadest point. The reason I think people get exercised about this is that we're living in a basically fraudulent society. A lot of our biggest institutions over the last year, companies like Lehman and GM, rock solid, stable pillars of American society, have proved to be mass hallucinations. There was nothing
House
there.
House of Cards, yeah.
And so sports is a small arena within which we can see acts of what some people might take to be fraudulence, and we can understand them in their totality. We can't do that with finance. We can't do that with politics. They're too big. We live within those systems. There's no way to see them in the round. We can do that with baseball.
Let's get some callers in. This is Luis. Luis with us from Phoenix. Go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you for the opportunity to express my opinion. First of all, I wanna let you know I play 8 years minor leagues, and I gotta tell you these guys in minor league, they're playing for absolutely nothing when it comes to money. 3%, only 3%. Sorry, now only 3% of the guys in minor league actually get a good bonus, and after that, you don't make money if you don't get to major league. So, first of all, that's wrong. Something should be done about that. And the next thing I want to know, once you get the opportunity, and you're so young, I mean, talking about guys reaching the major league at 20, 21, 22, 23 years old, playing major league level, so much pressure you get from your family, from your organization, from society itself, to push you to do, to do whatever it takes to get the job done. I don't agree with the use ESSER. I never use it, and I don't agree. It's bad for the human body, period. But one thing that concerned me and upset me too is that all these politicians love to jump on the subject and make a show. I don't know why. If the politicians really want to protect society and make sure that the guys that are a role model for people are doing it the right way, they should go nationwide and test the law enforcement of this country. They're juicing up, and they're far more dangerous.
Well, that's
the guy that has a baseball bat.
I understand, Luis. Thanks very much for the call. And are you getting ready to start the season?
Oh no, I'm sorry. I don't play anymore. I'm just a regular guy now. I'm paying my bills and living paycheck by paycheck. But I know how it feels like to have so much pressure on you when you don't even making no money at all.
I understand. Thanks very much. Good luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Scott. Scott with us in San Francisco.
Hi. I was just listening to the conversation about A-Rod and the question about whether or not steroids have lasting effects.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 52, and I played football at the elite level and competed in weightlifting at the elite level. And I retired when I was 26, and I'll tell you, at 52, I still enjoy positive effects of having taken steroids. It's pretty remarkable, actually. So to say that if someone takes them for 5 years, there's no question but that it changes motor skills and changes the makeup of your muscle tissue. So that's without question. And you speak to any athlete who's taken them, they will tell you exactly that.
Any bad effects?
Not that I've noticed so far, none whatsoever, but like I say, at 52, I train mostly for physical fitness now, and it's remarkable. If I take 2 months off and I get flabby and soft and all that, in 2 weeks, the muscle girth and all of that comes right back. It's really remarkable.
Well, Scott, you may have just won the genetic lottery, too. You never know.
I don't think so, because I didn't even take them till I was 21, and before that, it just didn't happen that way. It's really quite different than what other people in my age group experience and what other people even younger experience. And I was over 300 pounds at one point, and I'm 220 now, and it really is a noticeable difference. And all of the athletes know this. All of the people who've taken them are aware of who's taking them, who isn't, and what the effects are. And the public is just kind of catching up now to something that's been going on 30 years.
Scott, thanks very much. Appreciate it. And, good luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And let's see if we can go now to this is Mickey. Mickey with us from Oklahoma City.
Hi. I've heard a lot in the last 24 hours about how in the early 90s the Texas Rangers clubhouse was full of steroids. I'm just wondering what liability falls with the owners and the managers, which, incidentally, the owner in the early 90s would have been our just past president. But I'm just curious if they hold any liability for the pressure and other things that they put on players today that lead to players taking steroids.
Tom Goldman, a lot of people said the owners also looked the other way when this was going on.
Yeah, as culpable as anyone. You know, our caller earlier who said fans are culpable. I mean, if you want to look at this as a culpability issue. But, you know, interestingly, Texas owner Tom Hicks is distancing himself from the news of the last day. He is not accepting A-Rod's apology and saying that he was basically duped back in 2000 when he signed that whopper contract with A-Rod. So, yes, owners. But, I mean, you know, this gets to what Tim was saying earlier. I mean, you need to convene a summit. But I think there are weightier issues on everyone's plate right now. But,
I'd be surprised if this came back before Congress, for example.
I should say that. So, although they're talking about wanting to get A-Rod in and seeing what he can reveal to them. So,
Tim Marchman. Some people say baseball might need a Truth and Reconciliation Commission where people would be able to confess what they did, and as long as they were telling the truth, there'd be no penalties.
If that's negotiated between the players and the owners, and they want to do it, there's no reason not to do it, but even the phraseology there, I think, just inflates the issue beyond all any recognition. I mean, drug use in sports is not comparable to apartheid. And moreover, I think we do have to recognize that this is going to be a problem going forward, that science is ahead of enforcement, and that there are real incentives and real pressures on athletes to take these drugs. If we don't acknowledge that fact, and the fact that we're a society that has very fraught issues around drug use, and that the kind of alternating hysteria and lackadaisical attitude towards drug use are part of that, then I think you could have every player who's ever done drugs come out, confess the real culture that was going on in the sport, explain their motivations, make everything clear. And we would still have the same problem in 10 years. So while I don't think that just legalizing the problem in the sport is the answer, I think the real long-term answer, more than getting the truth out about what's happened in the past, is just treating this as something of a chronic problem and toning down the surprise that we get about it and just acknowledging that people are going to do it and leaving it to the market to solve it. One thing that we haven't talked too much about today is that there's no evidence that fans care at all. Baseball revenues are constantly going up. Attendance is going up. TV viewership is going up. By any metric you care to name, there's been no decrease in interest in baseball over more than a decade of really serious drug scandals.
Just the 1 year after the season was canceled due to a labor problem.
Right. There's just no evidence that people care enough to stop spending money on baseball over this. And so, you know, it's cynical, but there's a part of me that says that this is at root a PR problem. And you can look to the NFL for that, because the NFL doesn't really have a testing program that's as good as Major League Baseball. And as I think our caller before would acknowledge, any athlete who's looking at a football field and a baseball field would have no question which one had more people on more substances. But the NFL isn't treated as a problem. And I think part of that goes to the cultural role that baseball plays as opposed to football.
Yes.
But another part of it is that the NFL has been, I believe, more cynical in treating it basically strictly as a PR problem, whereas baseball gets more involved in hand-wringing over it and treating it as maybe a bigger problem than it really is.
Mickey, thanks very much for the phone call. And we'd like to thank Tim Marchman for his time today. He's a contributor to Slate Magazine. He joined us from WBEZ, our member station in Chicago. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And Tom Goldman, NPR sports correspondent, with us from his home in Portland, Oregon. Tom, as always, appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Neil.
And again, if you joined us late, Miguel Tejada, according to the Associated Press, has reached a plea agreement and will be sentenced tomorrow as he pleads to lying to Congress about steroid use in baseball. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.